Welcome to Zichur Daf Siman. I'm Rabbi Avram Goldhari, and today we're in Sechur Shabbos Daf Tzadi Hei. So the three topics we're going to focus on. Number one, Rabbi Abba said it was explained to him in the name of Rabbi Yossi Bar Rabbi Chanina. The one who braids or fixes her hair on Shabbos is liable for the malacha bona, a building. The Gemara asks if braiding can be considered building. The Gemara brings a proof that it is from Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh, who explained the pasuk, V'yiven Hashem el kimetz etzela, and Hashem, God, built the side he had taken from the man into a woman, that Kodesh Baruch Hu braided Chava's hair and brought her to Adam. From the cities by the sea, they call a braider a banyasa, a builder. Point number two, the next Mishnah states that if one plucks a plant from an atzitz nakuv, a perforated flower pot, on Shabbos, he is liable, but he is exempt if it was unperforated. Rabbi Shimon says one is exempt in both cases. Rashi explains that according to the Tanakhama, in the case of the perforated pot, since the plant draws nourishment from the ground, it is considered attached to the ground. Plucking it would therefore violate the malach of tolesh, plucking, which is a tolda of kotzer, harvesting. And point number three, Rava said there are five different measures with regards to perforations in an earthenware kli. A hole large enough to let out a liquid will render a shard no longer susceptible to tumah since it no longer has any use. A larger hole that will enable a liquid to seep in will render a kli unfit to be used for the mechatas, because the pasuk says that a kli needs to be used for mechatas, and this size hole makes it that it's not considered a proper kli. A larger hole the size of a small root makes the kli an atzis nakuv, a perforated pot, and the seeds inside are therefore considered attached to the ground and cannot become tameh. A larger hole the size of an olive will render an earthenware vessel no longer susceptible to tumah, since it's typically no longer usable. However, if someone designates the kli to store pomegranates, then they are still makabel tumah. A hole the size of a pomegranate will render kli no longer susceptible to tumah. However, if it's surrounded by a sealed cupboard, samit pasil, and it's inside a tent together with a dead person, it will prevent tumah from entering the interior unless the majority of the kli is broken. But she explains that tumah can only enter a kli through an opening and not through a hole in its side. So once again, the three points are number one. Rabbi Abba said it was explained to him in the name of Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina. The one who braids or fixes her hair on Shabbos is liable for the malacha bona, for building. The Gemara asks if braiding can be considered building. The Gemara brings a proof that it is from Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh, who explained the pasuk, "Yiven Hashem el kimetz etzela," and Hashem, God, built the side he had taken with man into a woman. That Hakadosh Baruch Hu braided Chava's hair and brought her to Adam. For in the cities by the sea, they call a braider a banyasa, a builder. Point number two, the next Mishnah states that if one plucks a plant from an atzitz nakuv, a perforated flower pot, on Shabbos, he is liable, but he is exempt if it was unperforated. Rabbi Shimon says one is exempt in both cases. Rashi explains that according to the Tanakhama, in the case of a perforated pot, since the plant draws nourishment from the ground, it is considered attached to the ground. Plucking it would therefore violate the malach of tolesh, a plucking, which is a tolda of kotzer, of harvesting. And point number three, Rabbi said there are five different measures with regards to perforations in an earthenware kli. A hole large enough to let out a liquid will render a shard no longer susceptible to tumah, since it no longer has any use. A larger hole that will enable a liquid to seep in will render a kli unfit to be used for the mechatas, because the pasuk says that a kli needs to be used for the mechatas, and this size hole makes it that it's not considered a proper kli. A larger hole the size of a small root makes the kli an atzitz nakuv, a perforated pot, and the seeds are inside are therefore considered attached to the ground and cannot become tameh. A larger hole the size of an olive will render an earthenware vessel no longer susceptible to tumah, since it typically no longer is usable. However, if someone designates the kli to store pomegranates, then they are still makabel tumah. And then the hole the size of a pomegranate will render a kli no longer susceptible to tumah. However, if it is surrounded by a sealed cover, it's a mit pasil, and it's inside a tent together with a dead person, it will prevent the tumah from entering the interior unless the majority of the kli is broken. Rashi explains that tumah can only enter a kli through an opening and not through a hole in its side. All right, so now we go to our Siman for Tzadi Hei. There were those who went with the number 95, high octane gas, the interstate 95 for those in the United States. We had 95% alcohol, Windows 95, Richard Berry and Passaic, New Jersey suggested a worker in a boring job going from 9 to 5. Then we had sound related. We had Baruch Leff in Baltimore suggesting a parent or someone shaking their head going, tse, tse, tse. And then we had Tsar, Chacha, Tsehov, Yellow, Matza. And I'm going to go with many people suggested Sahal, army. And then there are those specifically suggested a tank in Tzahal, which I'm going to go with. So I'm going to make Tzadi Hei a Tzahal tank commander. So thank you again for everybody for your suggestions. And Tzadi Hei is a Tzahal tank commander. Here goes. The tank commander told the woman who braided hair for a living he needed her perforated flower pots for target practice to master blasting holes of 5 different sizes. Once again in slow motion. The tank commander, that means we're on Duff, Tzadi Hei. The tank commander told the woman who braided hair for a living, which reminds us, Rabbi Abov said it was explained to him in the name of Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina. The one who braids or fixes her hair on Shabbos is liable for bona, building. The Gemara asks if braiding can be considered building. The Gemara brings a proof that it is from Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh, who explained the pasuk, "Yiven Hashem Elokim Asetzela," and Hashem, God, built the sign he had taken from the man into a woman, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu braided Chava's hair and brought it to Adam. For in the cities by the sea, they call a braider a banyasa, a builder. So the tank commander told the woman who braided hair for a living, he needed her perforated flower pots for target practice, which reminds us, the next Mishnah states that if one plucks a plant from an atzitz nakuv, a perforated flower pot, on Shabbos, he's liable. But he's exempt if it was unperforated. Rabbi Shimon says one is exempt in both cases. Rashi explains that according to the Tanakhama, in the case of the perforated flower pot, since the plant draws nourishment from the ground, it is considered attached to the ground. Plucking would therefore violate the malach of tolish, plucking, which is a tolda of kotzer, of harvesting. So the tank commander told the woman who braided hair for a living he needed her perforated flower pots for target practice to master blasting holes of 5 different sizes. Which reminds us, Rav has said there are 5 different measures with regards to perforations in an earthenware kli. A hole large enough to let out a liquid will render a shard no longer susceptible to tuma, since it no longer has a use. A larger hole that will enable a liquid to seep in will render a kli unfit to be used for the mechatas, because the pasuk says that a kli needs to be used for the mechatas, and this size hole makes it that it's not considered a proper kli. A larger hole, the size of a small root, makes a kli an atzis nakuv, a perforated pot, and the seeds inside are therefore considered attached to the ground and cannot become tame. A larger hole, the size of an olive, will render an earthenware vessel no longer susceptible to tuma, since it's typically no longer usable. However, if someone designates the kli to store pomegranates, then there's still makabel tuma. And a hole the size of a pomegranate will render a kli no longer susceptible to tuma. However, if it's surrounded by a sealed cover, it's a mit pasil, and it's inside a tent together with a dead person, it will prevent tuma from entering the interior, unless the majority of the kli is broken. And Rashi explains that the tuma can only enter a kli through an opening and not through a hole in its side. So once again, the tank commander told the woman who braided hair for a living he needed her perforated flower pots for target practice to master blasting holes of 5 different sizes. All right, so now it's time for a 4 blah bat chazara. Dav Tzadi Av. So the symbol for Tzadi Av is a security guard by the exit sign. The grocery store security guard standing by the exit sign, security guard by an exit sign, that means we're on Daf Tzadi Av. The grocery store security guard standing by the exit sign reminded customers on their way out. They could change their mind and plant certain foods, which reminds us, Rav said in the name of Nachman, that if one took out a quantity of produce, the signs were gregarious to a Rishus Rabim with the purpose of eating it there, and before placing it down, he changed his mind and decided to plant it, or vice versa, he's liable for transferring. The Gemara clarifies that one might have thought, Be'inan akir b'hanacha b'chada machshava. The picking up and the placing down of the object must be done with the same intent. Therefore, Rav Nachman teaches there is no such requirement. So the grocery store security guard standing by the exit sign reminded customers on their way out they could change their mind and plant certain foods and recommended they keep the vegetables that tend to shrink, which reminds us, Rava asks if one would be liable if he took out a quantity of produce, the signs of gregarious to Rishus Rabim, and then during mid-transfer it shrank in size, and therefore at that point he would not be liable if he put it down, and then swelled again, that at the time the person placed it down, it was the size of Kogaris. Rav's question is whether Yesh Dichui in Shabbos or Ain Dichui in Shabbos. Is the principle of negation operative in Shabbos laws or not? In other words, does the fact that there was a moment during the transfer when the produce shrank to be smaller than the necessary size void the original Akira and negate the obligation to bring Achatas? The Gemara leaves the question as a teku. So the grocery store security guard standing by the exit sign reminded customers on their way out they could change their mind and plant certain foods, and recommended they keep the vegetables that tend to shrink bonded in a basket full of cucumbers, not mustard seed. Which reminds us, the next Mishnah states that if one takes out a basket filled with the produce from his house and places it on the outer threshold, even if most of the produce is in the Rishus HaRabim, the person is exempt from bringing achatas, since some of the produce is still in the Rishus HaYachid. Chizkiah says that the Mishnah is referring to a basket full of cucumbers and gourds, but in a case of mustard seeds, he would be liable. Rashi explains that cucumbers and gourds span the length of the basket, and therefore no single unit has been fully transferred, whereas, in the case of mustard seeds, some of the seeds would be resting completely in Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara explains that Chizkiyah holds Eged Kli Loshmei Eged. The bond of the vessel is not recognized as a bond. It doesn't make the mustard seeds as they're still bonded to the Rosh Yachid. Rav Yochanan says that even in the case of mustard seeds, one is exempt. The Gemara explains that Rav Yochanan holds Eged Kli Shmei Eged. Daf Tzadi Beis. So the Simfer Tzadi Beis is a turtle. So the victorious turtle, that means we're on Daf Tzadi Beis. The victorious turtle held his trophy high above 10 tefachim in Rishus of Rabbim, which reminds us. The next mission of the Perek states that one is only liable for carrying if one carried in a normal manner. Including the list of normal forms of carrying is carrying on one's shoulders, for that is how B'nai Kahas carried the kelim of the Mishkan. Rabbi Elazar learns from the carrying of B'nai Kahas, who carried the kelim at a height of more than 10 tefachim from the ground, that if one transfers a load from one Rishus to another by hand and keeps it in the air more than 10 tefachim above the ground, that he is liable. Rashi explains that even though 10 tefachim above Rishus HaRabim is considered a Makom Patur, and if one were to throw an object in Rishus HaRabim and it got stuck on the side of the wall 10 tefachim above the ground, he would be exempt. In this case, he's liable because this is the way B'nai Kahas transported the Kalim. So the victorious turtle held his trophy high above 10 tefachim in Rishus HaRabim and guarded his winnings in front of him, which reminds us, the following Mishnah states that if one intended to take an object in front of him, but in mid-transfer it slipped behind him, he is exempt. However, if he intended to take the object out behind him and it slipped in front of him, he is liable. Rav explains that in the first case, when the person carried the object out in front of him, his intent was a good shmir, to guard it well. Since it slipped behind him, it was guarded poorly. Since his initial machshava, his thought was not fulfilled, Rashi says it's a case of misasek. In the second case, where the person carried out an object behind him, he only intended a minimal guarding. When it slipped in front, it resulted in even better guarding, making him liable since he was pleased with the result. So the victorious turtle held his trophy high above 10 tefachim in Rishus HaRabim and guarded his winnings in front of him, while the defeated rabbit carried a massive carrot home together with his friend. Which reminds us, the following Mishnah introduces a Malchukas Tanaim in a case where two people carry out an object that neither individual could carry alone. The Tanakhama holds that they are both liable. Rabbi Shimon says they're both exempt. The Gemara brings up Brisa that states that if one person was capable of carrying the object alone and the other one was not capable, then everyone will agree that he is liable. The Gemara on Daf Tzadik Gimel will clarify which one is liable. Daf Tzadik Gimel. So the Simfer Tzadik Gimel is a chugga chugga choo choo train. So here it goes. The little train, that means we're on Daf Tzadik Gimel. The little train that pushed the big train up the mountain was insulted when it was called Amir Misayeya, which reminds us. Rav Chisda stated that in the case where two people carrying an object into Rishus HaRabim, and one was strong enough to carry it by himself and the other was not, then the one who was able to carry it by himself is liable since he accomplished the entire action, and the one who was unable is exempt since he didn't accomplish anything. When Rav Hamnuna suggested the weaker person was a masayeya, an aid to the stronger person, Rav Chisda responded, masayeya ein bo mamish, merely aiding someone is not significant. The Gemara brings a number of proofs that support Rav Chisda's view, the final one being that if a kohen is mekabel dam, he receives blood of an offering using his right hand, and his left hand aids his right hand in holding the kli, the avoda is valid. Even though an avoda that is done with a left hand is invalid, in this case it was merely a misayeya, which is insignificant. So the little train that pushed the big train up the mountain was insulted when it was called a mere misayeya. So it crashed through the door the two men were holding to trap a deer, which reminds us that the Braisa on Tzadi Beis on the base says that according to Rabbi Meir, if two people carried out an object together and they both were strong enough to carry it out individually, they are still both liable. The Gemara asks if they individually need to carry out one full shear, or is one full shear sufficient to make them both liable? The Gemara brings a number of proofs to support the opinion that only one full shear is required. One proof is from a Mishnah that states, if a deer entered a house and two people who are both capable individually of closing the door close the door together, then they are both liable for the malach of trapping. From the fact that the Mishnah does not require each of them to trap a full measure indicates that one full measure is sufficient for the two of them. So the little train that pushed the big train up the mountain was insulted when it was called a mere misayeya. So it crashed through the door two men were holding to trap a deer and went back to pulling a kli, carrying a little pea. Which reminds us, the next mission of the Perek states that if one transfers food that is less than the required shear in a kli, the person is exempt from carrying even the kli, since a kli tefelelo. The kli is secondary to the food. The Miri explains that since the kli is a mere accessory, it's subordinate to the food, and since there's no liability for the primary object, there's no liability for the subordinate object. Daf Tzadi Dalet. So the Simfer Tzadi Dalet is a hunter. So here goes. The hunter, that means run Daf Tzadi Dalet. The hunter was having a rough day when he dropped the live squirrel he was carrying because it felt so heavy. which reminds us, the Mishnah on Daf Tzadik Gimel on Beis stated that if one carries a live person on a bed, he's exempt for carrying the person and even for taking out the bed, because the bed is secondary to the person. The Gemara tends to prove that this is the minority opinion of Rabbi Nassim based on a brisa that taught that if one carried out animals into Rishus Rabbim, either dead or alive, one is liable. Rabbi Nassim, however, disagrees and says that although one is liable for carrying a dead animal, he's exempt for carrying a living animal, Shachai Noset Tzatzmo, because a living creature supports its own weight. This is like our case in the Mishnah of carrying a live person on a bed. Rabbi says that it's possible that the Rabbanan also hold that in regards to a person, Hachai Noset Tzatzmo, and they only disagree with Rabbi Nassim in the case of animals, because animals stiffen themselves to try to escape, and as Rashi explains, they actually feel heavier. Therefore, they cannot be considered as if they carry themselves. So the hunter was having a rough day when he dropped the live squirrel he was carrying, because it felt so heavy, plucking out one of its three white hairs. Which reminds us, if a Metzora plucked out one of two white hairs in the afflicted area of his skin to prevent himself from being declared Tamei, he has transgressed a negative commandment. There's a Machlokas on the rhyme regarding a case where Metzora plucked out one of three white hairs in the afflicted area of his skin. Rav Nachman holds that he's liable because his action is potentially consequential. For if one more hair becomes removed, the tumor will depart. Rav Shesha says he's not liable since the tumor is still present with the two remaining white hairs. Therefore, the act was inconsequential. So the hunter was having a rough day when he dropped the live squirrel he was carrying because it felt so heavy, plucking out one of its three white hairs, which got snagged on his partially detached fingernail. Which reminds us, it was taught in an amended brisa that Rabbi Shimon Elazar says that fingernails or cuticles that have become detached most of the way may be removed by hand, but it's rabbinically forbidden to be done with a kli, with an instrument. If they did not become detached most of the way, then removing them by hand is rabbinically forbidden, and removing them with an instrument would make one liable to bring a chatas. Rabbi Bar Chana said in the name of Yochanan that removing them is only allowed where the cuticles have become detached toward the top of the finger and are peeling back toward the base of the nail, because this causes considerable pain. All right, now it's time to conclude with our pop quiz of 10 questions, plus 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. Number 1, which daf do you learn that there are 5 different sized holes when it comes to the dinim of a kli cheres? That's on daf Tzadi Hey. Good. Number 2, which daf we have a question, if someone carried out produce that shrank below the shear and then swelled back to the shear before the hanacha, whether yesh dichui when inyan Shabbos? That's on daf Tzadi Alf. Good. Number 3, which daf do we learn that a kli is considered tafel to the object it contains, and therefore if the object is less than the shear in Shabbos, one is also punched from carrying the kli? That's on daf Tzadi Gimel. Good. Number 4, which daf we have a machokas regarding which Shabbos laws were taught at Mara? That's on daf Pei Zayin. Good. Number 5, which daf do we learn that one can remove a partially detached fingernail if it's hurting him? That's on daf Tzadi Dal. Good. Number 6, which daf do we learn that one who carries an object above 10 tefachim Rishus Rabim is chayv, and that's learned from B'nai Kahas? That's on daf Tzadi Beis. Good. Number 7, which daf do we learn is regarding whether one applies the claw of a chay noset tzatzmo to animals? That's on daf Tzadi Dal. Good. Number 8, which daf do we learn that if one forgets what he stored something away for and he carries it out, we go al das rishon what his original intent was? That's on daf Tzadi. Good. Number 9, which daf do we learn that braiding hair is considered the malacha bona? That's on daf Tzadi Hey. Good. And finally, number 10, which daf do we learn that doesn't make a difference if one decided to carry something out for eating and then change his mind to planting before doing the hanacha? That's on daf Tzadi Alf. Good. And now the 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. Number 1, which daf do we discuss the ending of the bracha of Asher Yetzar? That's on daf Sama. Good. Number 2, which daf do we discuss Kol Isha? That's on daf Chavdal. Great. And finally, number 3, which daf do we learn when to say Chavdal, whether it's during tefillah or whether it's on a coast? In the background behind that, that's on daf Lamed Gimel. Great. That concludes our pop quiz, plus the 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. This is Rabbi Avraham Goldman Zichu wishing you a great day and great learning.